Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Today is June 29th. I cannot believe it, 2016. Thank you for joining us today. It is Wednesday, which is an exciting day for me because that's the day that we interview activists out there and truth seekers and people who are healers and people that are helping us learn the facts and people who help us learn how to cope with the facts. So that's kind of the philosophy. And today I'm really excited because we have Dana Durnford on the line with us. So let me just jump in because an hour goes really quickly with Dana. Hi, Dana.
Show. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Lonnie.
Hey. So, Dana, let me just ask you, why don't you explain to our listeners what you did? I mean, Dana went up and down the coast. Why don't you explain in a short synopsis? I think most of our listeners know what you've done, but why don't you synopsize what you've done, what your activities have been done for like the last maybe year and a half, 2 years, or even your history, because really that your history in this interest in the uranium mining and nuclear goes far back, farther than Fukushima. Am I correct?
Right, yeah, I go back 8 years, 9 years now. Just a quick note before I say anything is that this morning it came out there was 865,000 more cancer patients in Japan in 2012. That was a year after Fukushima. So the worst since World War II. So 865,000 cancer patients, new cancer patients a year after. So they, like, cancer is the last one that shows up, and that's the gallows laugh. Anybody's not familiar. But I'm Dana Durnford, also known as the Nuclear Proctologist.org. And what I do is I flush out the nuclear narrative. And if they're lying, then we call them on it. And if they're telling the truth, then we praise them on it. And if you look at my site, you notice I have no videos praising nuclear scientists. It's the most bizarre thing imaginable. Anyway, I covered 15,000 miles off the coastline of British Columbia, where there's 26,000 islands. That was 260 days. This was a crowdfunded emergency operation to go out and do a species count. And so we specialize in the tidal zones, which is the nursery of the Pacific Ocean. And it is an incredible diversity in the tidal zones. This is the floras, the flanas. There's 600 algaes. And there's a mass of other species. And these are well-known, well-vetted, well-researched species and habitats. And the species we're talking and alluding to are the indigenous population. There's another 4.2 million species in the Pacific Ocean, but there was no room for them on the coastline. Okay, and so we went and looked at the tidal zone because that was the most vulnerable, not tunas, which are still vulnerable, don't get me wrong, not whales, which are emaciated and dying in droves, literally emaciated, 12 inches of blubber to 4 inches. But I mean, we did study the birds, we studied the insects, we studied the tidal zones, the actual nursery of the Pacific Ocean. And what we discovered and verified, and 200,000 pictures, incredible miles and miles of underwater footage. And I have a history of 14,000 hours underwater. So I probably have more time underwater than any nuclear scientists out there talking about this stuff, or all of them combined talking about this stuff. I also have another 4,000 hours of exploratory underwater, like 14,000 logged hours commercially, 6 hours a day. And I was injured 15 years ago diving 6 hours a day for 128 days straight. And I woke up basically in a hyperbaric chamber, and that's where Dana's life began. Dana, previous to that, I don't really remember that person. It was a bad accident. It took a decade to get out of bed. And the guy that came out of that hopefully in one way is the same Dana, but he's a different person and sees the world the way it should be seen, as a treasure, as something that is special and something unique, and it is in this solar system.
Do you mind if I ask you, interject here, how long before or during, you know, like when was that period when you had recuperated to being able to get out of bed, if you don't mind me asking?
Just last couple of years.
So was it during the whole, after Fukushima, like when Fukushima happened,
was after
you still beat bedridden?
Still a couple of years after that.
Wow.
Before I got out of bed. I only got out of bed to do the coastline.
And that's really?
That's why I'm out of bed now, per se. But I still live in a hospital bed. But at least now I can move around functionally. I don't have the strength or something, but I can functionally do little things, right? And so I lost my wheelchair over the boat.
Yeah,
on one of the expeditions during a storm. I didn't know it was gone until after I found shelter.
And you didn't know? Wow.
Yeah, no, I didn't know it had washed off. I had lost other stuff during that storm. I had got caught in a number of storms, done a lot of damage. Total, probably done $10,000 worth of damage, I guess, in those 260 days in different storms. I blew up on rocks in a hurricane, 7,500 mile an hour winds at 3:30 in the morning. Woke up on a rock pile in the middle of nowhere, isolated. The closest person to me was on the space station.
How long was the whole journey from the time you started it till the time you ended?
Well, on the ocean itself was 260 days on the ocean. Expeditions, but in between that was building the boat and building the operation, raising funds and everything else. But actual physical time out there, 260 days, up to 5 months without coming home, because you couldn't afford to come home, and in one sense, most of the time anyway. And you were trying to do the entire coastline. You were not trying to. I was determined to see that entire coastline. I needed to see it with my own two eyes and document it. Because I figured that would start that conversation, because it was so devastated. I figured, how could anybody ignore this once I show it? And that's where that energy came from. It was a hope, and that hope was quickly dashed, of course. When I came ashore, I ended up getting arrested.
I guess they showed you. That's what that's about.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I'm having you on. And in fact, to our listeners, we haven't worked out the details. We talked about it, I mean, very briefly right before we got on the air. I really want to have Dana come on very regularly to share his information, because this is a venue where one of the very few venues where we do talk about the facts about nuclear, the real facts, and we have people who come on who tell us about the facts. And Dana is one of the very few. In fact, I think, Dana, you're the only person or entity who, you know, like, there's not even a government entity that did what Dana Durnford has done.
And they all should have done it, yeah.
Oh, and that's, in fact, and in fact, full disclosure, I actually have contributed, and I do intend on continuing to contribute to Dana's efforts whenever I can, because honestly, the work that he has done and the efforts he's done, really, it is astounding. Go to the nuclearproctologist.org. Look at his archives. Look at what the coastline of British Columbia looks like. That is why it's shocking. This is why, in fact, they are not. Listen, if When we have a meltdown going on, they are not telling us. And when any of these nuclear plants in Canada or in the United States have, unless it blows up, folks, they're not telling us. They're not going to warn us.
Dale come out and try to explain it away.
Well, they won't even tell us unless it gets really
bad. They'll only tell
us
when everybody knows it. They'll tell us when everybody around it can see it, because it's in such a populated area all the time. At that point, they'll come out and then is trying to mitigate it. They admit to it, and so now you turn to them looking for documentation, and you really got to be really good at reading between the lines, or you're not going to get nothing out of them. Yes, Lonnie, and you've been supporting me, and you know,
I
that's
think
full disclosure
to
in one sense,
afford,
but you're an activist too, right? So,
you know, even if people who can afford just small contributions, those small contributions add up. I know when Kevin and I were doing fundraising, small contributions add up, and they make a difference whether you can take an action or not.
I need to raise a couple of thousand a month. That's basic. I could do a lot more with a lot more. But if I had a couple of thousand a month, then I could really get in their faces with that. But when it's just me by myself, and it wasn't on the coastline with that 260 days, that was everybody out there. That only happened because everybody constantly found ways to chip in. And some people went and made it possible. Like, you know, there's a few people out there that without them, this would have never happened. And that's because they gave it their all. They bankrupted themselves literally to see this through. And that's why I done the job the way I done it, why it was done so well, and why we covered, and why I continue to do the things I do, is because I'm not going to disrespect what they done, what they accomplished it in many senses, not me, even though I'm the person who was out there and done everything and had those skills. And it takes an amazing amount of skills to pull off what I pulled off and come out of a hospital bed after over a decade and go pull it off is just extraordinary when I look back
amazing.
On it.
It's
at
true.
The time, I had no concept I could do it. Never dreamt it. I mean, originally, I didn't go on the ocean. Originally, I still wasn't healthy enough. Originally, I never got on the boat for the first 3 months or 4 months. I sent out three people. I never went out there a single time. I didn't drive the boat. I went and bought the boat. I took it out for a test drive. Said, okay, the boat's a nice boat. That'll do. And then we built the boat, and I'd done all the work building the boat on top of that. I built everything on it and organized it all. And then I sent out three people with cameras and equipment, and they went out there, and we went to different places, and we had to organize it all. And then, you know, we had to find spots to upload that documentation to keep the project alive. So you were up all night with these crappy bandwidths uploading high quality pictures. That didn't work because there wasn't enough bandwidth, so I was just taking screen captures to shove it out there and get people to try to appreciate what we're doing here and why.
And what it looked like. I have been following you for this entire journey, and I will tell you what, folks. It is shocking, the devastation to the coastline of British Columbia. The rocks are gray. It looks like it's Southern California desert. It does not look like the Pacific Northwest, where I live in the Pacific Northwest in Eugene, Oregon, and frankly, it's a lot less green here than it is where Dana lives. And I will tell you what, on the coastline up there, it is not supposed to have barren rocks. Am I correct, Dana?
Well, the rocks that are barren are supposed to be covered in mussels.
Right, exactly.
And so 80% of the coastline was covered in mussels. So that's just one species that most people can wrap their minds around. Now it's down to 1% to 1% of the coastline. But you would starve to death walking the coastline, where normally you can go anywhere on the coastline with a basket and feed 10 people at low tide. Anywhere you want. Anybody could. You didn't have to be a genius. And you didn't have to look for it. And right there, right within a 10-square-foot area, you would stand there, no matter where you pitched, on a typical coastline, except for maybe 6% of the coastline. But like the, you know, anywhere where there's food, which was the whole coastline, but you know, a lot of spots are not accessible to people and the waves are too big and everything else. So any nook and cranny that you normally would go into at low tide and decent conditions, decent weather, you would no problem feeding a bunch of people. Now there's nothing there.
And in fact,
so
speaking of
shocking.
feeding a bunch of people, that's the reason why the Pacific Northwest has the longhouses, why the Pacific, people of the Pacific Northwest were the only Native American tribes to have totem poles in the entire country. And you know why? Because they had the leisure time, the abundance of food in the Pacific Northwest. There was so much food up here.
Yeah.
They were the only Native American tribe. Yes, they were hunter-gatherers, but they were able to have permanent settlements because there was just food everywhere. They didn't have to forage and move along every few months. They could just stay put all year long. And they did, and they built a very intricate community. And I have to say, frankly, Dana, I don't know if you've come across them, but I find it shocking that the Native American community,
I know them well,
that they still eat fish. I run into them here in Oregon. They still eat salmon. I mean, it is a sacred food.
Well, they've been
for them.
Carbon dated there for 14,000 years around here, and so they've traditionally been doing this for 14,000
yes.
years, right? You know, and they were warring with each other, warring fractions of different tribes.
Mm-hmm.
There's many tribes along the coastline. Every community got a native reserve right alongside of it, and so but cancer is rampant. It's
That's
rampant
good.
In all these little communities.
Yes.
It's absolutely, and it's vicious cancers. It's vicious, like blood disorder cancers, leukemia type cancers. And most of their diet is seafood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like an incredible amount of seafood. And just eating nature, the berries and everything else along the shoreline and coastlines. And these are the stuff that are aggregating the radiation. Mm-hmm. So a fish magnifies it 10 to 15,000 times the radionuclides. Accumulating and bioaccumulating them in our bodies, and a filter feeder like mussels or clams or scallops or abalone and oysters and stuff, that'll magnify it 120,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is huge. This is a huge magnifications. It is.
I mean, Dr. Goffman in Poison Power said the minimum that it's magnetized is each isotope is magnetized at a different rate. And so, like, for example, potassium is magnetized at 1,000. They need potassium, so they magnetize cesium-137, 134, 1,000 times. Other isotopes, however, get magnetized at a greater rate inside their body. So it is really...
you're saying to your folks is like cesium acts like potassium. And so potassium is good for you. It's natural. Your body's made up of it. Your clothing, your material around you is made up of it. And then cesium goes that same path because it has the same atomic principles of it. And so strontium acts like calcium, for instance. And so calcium, of course, goes right to your bones. But cesium goes in your muscles, and that's what causes these heart attacks. But also cesium goes to your thyroid gland. So they tell you about iodine-131, but that's an 8-day half-life, so most people blow it off. But it's still really bad, because once the effect lasts a lifetime once you're exposed to it. But the cesium also goes directly into the thyroid, and the same type of those emitters, they all go to your thyroid. So it's not just iodine, which is the big... The whole industry is predicated up on lie after lie after lie,
right.
After manipulation and deception and misrepresentation and insult and injuries. Yeah, these people are completely out of control. And that if they were to go up into an inquisition of their degrees, nuclear degrees, and were held to task and asked to answer in front of a medical board or a nuclear board who gave them their license and say, well, you say it's like a banana, but we gave you a degree because you knew better. You say it's like walking in sunshine, but we gave you a degree because you know better. And then, therefore, we're going to take your degree away from you. I mean, if that was to happen, every nuclear scientist out there would lose their degree. Every one of them are guilty of that lie. Every one of them are guilty of misrepresenting natural radiation and equating it with man-made. And every one of them should be held accountable, needs to be held accountable, and that are living with diplomatic immunity that is not going to last forever. That's about to be taken away from them because we're not going to put up with it anymore because the media is not going to hold them accountable or not even going to vet what they say not going to have a counter-narrative to it. They're not going to have a left-right narrative.
Well,
they're just having a panel of experts. Go ahead, Lonnie.
You know, when you're talking about accountability, the what's it saying? The rooster has come home to roost. When we were talking about the population dropping off, I started doing a little Googling, and my mouth just fell open. The population, according to nextchart.com, the pop to bluefish tuna population has dropped 97%. And they're saying it's due to overfishing. The interesting thing about this is, and Dana, you're actually a victim of this lying mentality, is that they ne in all of these stories about the deaths of these animals all around the world, is they never mention the radiation that we're talking about. 100% of the tuna tested positive for radiation within a year or a year and, well, by the time I got actively engaged in Fukushima, which was May of 2012, the tuna had already been testing to be 100% positive. So now we are in 2016, the population has dropped off by 97%, Dana. 97%. And
Yeah,
no one's
because the
talking
squid
about
and the
radiation.
anchovies and the herring and the sardines and everything have dropped down to a percent of a percent. So their food is gone. Yeah.
Right.
Same as the whales have lost 12 inches, went from 12 inches of blubber to 4 inches when we found them dead. They emaciated. Same as the 3,200 polar bears up in the northern area that now are emitted. All 3,200 are starving to death for the last 3 years and emaciated. And we've seen that in other areas too, where one bear was chased for 700 kilometers, and he never found nothing to eat and finally died. But he had the deepest dive and the longest dive of a polar bear in desperation of trying to find food, and he starved to death. And there's other examples in different continents of polar bears starving to death, completely emaciated. Now, I come from a land of polar bears. I come from a land where we still have no cars. And when a polar bear comes in the harbor on an iceberg, everybody gets out on the balcony with their guns and kills it, because if that makes it ashore, we're done. And that is the, I've never seen or even heard tell of
Dana,
emaciated
where are
polar
you
bears. A
from?
polar bear will eat a black bear, like a big black bear. A polar bear will take down a moose in a heartbeat. I'm
You're
from
kidding.
the east coast of Canada, from Newfoundland, and Newfoundland is full of these little communities. It's a very isolated island, 7 hour ferry ride off the Canadian coast. Yeah, and 2 million of those people have left that province. There's now about a 500,000 left there. But I grew up, when I left there, I had 30,000 hooks and 120 gill nets. They're still down there sitting in the grass, rotted. They had a moratorium on the industry. But that most likely was because of Sellafield, England, at the same time, was leaking out 4 million liters a day. Yeah, and
Still,
so it
I
still
mean,
is. Yeah, it's still going on.
I
They
mean
don't ever
that's the
really
thing.
stop.
It's not like this
They're not
is the
trying to
thing.
stop.
Sellafield is leaking nonstop, and this is what people don't understand. These are
Hamilton, yeah.
catastrophic events. It's like they are not just like, oh, we're leaking water. We're leaking actively radiated water,
This was running over mixed oxide fuel. They had a mixed oxide fuel plant there. Right, this
man.
was Sellafield, and that melted down. And they changed the name of the company. I can't even remember it off the top of my head for some reason right now, but they changed the name of it in order to hide the disaster that never stopped.
That's right.
Yeah. So the whole industry has no accountability, and it's out of control. It's vicious. It's a violent thuggery in every sense of the word. It's bankrupt in every state and every province in Canada. Nuclear can't survive without a power plant like coal or gas to run it. It's the stupidest thing imaginable. Just get rid of the nuclear and let the gas or coal run. It'll provide the same electricity. The nuclear power plant
Yes.
is an enormous structure, an
Well,
incredible
that's
structure, 33 years
I
to build
have to
it.
say, Dana, that whole idea about the nuclear and the coal power plants, ironically, here I'm having a conversation with a National Resource Defense Fund, who is actively engaged in working with the Illinois legislature to keep two rickety old nuclear power plants alive so they can close down some coal plants in Illinois. That's what they're saying.
Right, but they got to keep some coal plants open to run the nuclear power plant.
Exactly.
But I mean, this is James Hansen. That's why all of these carbon-free quotes, like we would bankrupt America to clean up carbon-free Hanford nuclear power site. You would bankrupt any country to clean up their mess. Chernobyl, you would bankrupt that country. Chernobyl accident mitigated the other 54 reactors in the country permanently because of the expenses and the endless amount of money. The nuclear fuel cycle, look, Australia wants to take back their nuclear, not wants to, but is being asked to take back used fuel rods. Should China take back the used TVs? Should America take back their used diapers? I mean, where does this precedence come from? And if it's not harmful, why is Australia being asked to take it back? And then Australia is using 50 local citizens who know nothing about nuclear, and for 4 days bombarding them with the nuclear apologist narrative, and the protesters who give you my narrative or your narrative are kept at bay by police on horses. So the experts are kept away, and then they bring in 50 people who don't know nothing, and then propagandize them over 4 days crash course, and then do that a few more times, and then allow these people to make the decisions based up on one narrative, and the police are used to keep the other narrative and demonize them and shit all over them, excuse the language, but that's what the horses are doing there. I mean, it's complete opposite of what
they ought to be doing. This is what people don't understand. They think this is just like regular corruption that we see at the upper levels of industry, like the railroad industry, how they bully their way across the nation, and how they or like even the coal industry, how they shut down the miners and bully. We're talking nuclear pollution that has implications to kill all life on our planet.
Well, simply put, look, I'll just back up that part of the conversation for Lonnie. There's six, it's a hard word for me sometimes, six times more breast cancer within 50 miles of a nuclear power plant. Not six times more breast cancer within 15 miles of a coal plant. Not six times more breast cancer within 15 miles of a gas plant. Not six times more breast cancer for women. There's 22% more child leukemias, up to 90% more child leukemias in different studies in Germany, France, and America. Different studies shown that right alongside of a nuclear power plant, there's a huge range of diseases. But they're like, they only look for cesium, but the reactors don't run on cesium. Reactors run on uranium. So why are they looking for cesium? Well, because allegedly it's easy to find. But the reactors don't run on cesium, right? There's no cesium melted core in any of the reactors. They're uranium cores. And uranium produces a host of byproduct, man-made. So cesium is uranium 235. Is cesium produced from the uranium, from the plutonium-239, americium-241. Well, uranium-235, americium, neptunium, and plutoniums, these are all man-made. So we got to have all these man-made ones first to produce the cesium ratio. But yet we report on the cesium ratio only as if that's the only element coming out there. But there's actually 100 times more strontium-90. And strontium-90... not going to leave your body for 300 years. Now, in 300 years, if you're still alive, you might be okay. But that's not going to happen. It sequesters in your body where normal radiation is equalized in your body. Your body treats normal, which is emitters, not radiation. You can't have a dirty bomb with bananas or a dirty bomb with potato chips or get a dirty bomb from collecting sunshine. You can't run power stations or reactors or anything else with that material. So why are they insisting constantly every time they open their yaps in the nuclear industry that is equivalent to that? Well, because that's the lie for 70 years. And if they say anything different, then everybody's going to wake up because say, hey, wait a second, you said for 70 years like a banana. But no one goes that further down the road. If it was a sports, they go look at every player. They look at every stat and every player. They look at every player where he come from, his entire history. But when it's nuclear, I can't argue with a nuclear scientist. Yeah, you can. All you got to say to a nuclear scientist, not like a banana, and watch him run away. Watch him cower.
I find in nuclear, the word scientist and nuclear rarely go together anymore because they have lost their science. Like, I literally had a young woman tell me that her teacher at the University of Oregon, her science teacher, told her that the nuclear scientists in France had already learned how to mitigate their nuclear waste and that nuclear is definitely clean. That was what she told me. Now,
right, because they're inundated with that at school and institutions.
Yes, and they are being brainwashed. The, quote, scientists. So there is, it's really literally the emperor has no clothes. The problem with them playing that game is it kills people. So the way they solve that problem is they don't keep track of who's dying, as we see in St. Louis. It wasn't this is one of my big issues. Chuck and I had this conversation from Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. I think that it is the doctor's responsibility. These doctors who see their patients regularly, they are, at least in America, they're not really allowed to keep track of these things. Doctors cannot track unless they're, you know,
doctors are not told what man-made rate, the difference between man-made and natural.
You know how IAEA
just put out a handbook for doctors.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. And so you know what that's all about. Right away, when you read through the literature, they're talking about natural radiation, equating it with natural radiation.
With a banana.
So there's a concerted effort. And who is the IAEA? Who the hell are these people that they got that arrogance, that hubris to come out and try to control that side of the narrative? That's what they're doing. They're not trying to have a proper debate where they look at both sides of the equation. They just keep spewing out, it's like natural, it's like bananas. But of course, this has to stop. This will stop at some point in the near future because we're not going to put up with it anymore because the law is so big and so easy. All you got to do is go look up James Hansen or any of the other nuclear apologists out there, and these are experts. Look at Lake Barrett, the guy who was in charge of Three Mile Island. After Fukushima, he came out and said, no, even though the news announcer from Bloomberg was telling them they got radiation in Tokyo. By the way, 400 trillion becquerels a kilogram now, last couple of days, just announced from cesium in Tokyo from the first couple of days. But they never went out and took samples the day after that or the day after that because they would have found all the other stuff because it never stopped coming in there. But what they done was they come out and admit it. Once again, they only talk about cesium. But 400 trillion becquerels a kilogram of these glass balls is what they're calling like a glass sooty that fell on Tokyo. Well, that's game over. That's the end of Tokyo. Look, we have all these terrorist bomb drills, dirty bomb drills in our community to stop the terrorists, not to clean up after, but to stop the terrorists because you can't clean it up after. So the minute it hit Tokyo, what happened was they gave out drinking water and bottles to the babies. And That was the admittance that was the end. So Tokyo's done. It's completely done. And every bit of food north of Tokyo, for sure, is garbage. Should be thrown away. And in Germany, 5 becquerels, you put it on a waste site, you throw your food away. Not away, but you put it at, you give it to the nuclear industry to store. And so that's what's supposed to be in each country. But they keep upping the limit to the point every time they have an accident, they just pretend, oh, no, it's 100 becquerels a kilogram. Meanwhile, it's just 100 becquerels a kilogram of cesium they're looking for, but the reactors don't run on cesium. And then the isotopes that they're producing are much more ratios, different isotopes than what is cesium. But cesium is the one they've, and all the studies, not all of them, but 98% of the studies, and I have thousands of them, they only talk about cesium.
And well, so, you know, I actually asked, who did I ask a long time ago? I was told the reason that they look for cesium is because of the nuclear testing in the 50s, that the other isotopes last so long, like hundreds of thousands of years, they can't identify where it came from.
Yeah,
but cesium.
Yeah, they can. They can identify.
Oh, really? So that was
they can identify the testing in a different country where it came from when they find the isotope. It has a signature.
Really?
Yes, it does, yeah.
On every single isotope, on every isotope, they can tell where it came from.
From the mixture of the fuel.
So that is actually
allegedly, this is literature. They know when North Korea set off a test because they found isotopes, and they know they're from North Korea-type weapons, from the minerals and the purity and everything else. It's kind of like gold, where you can tell where gold came from by its purity. You can tell how old it is by its purity. You can tell how when it was smelted by its purity. When you find like a gold coin or a gold relic or something like that, you can trace it all the way back. So they studied nuclear elements more than they have the natural elements on this planet. There's thousands of nuclear elements. They studied them on animals. They killed animals. No matter what they gave the animal from the nuclear industry, it killed them. But we don't hear about any of those studies in the media or in the academics or from the nuclear scientists or in the debates. All they talk about is fruit flies and potassium, or the natural stuff on the planet can't mutate a fruit fly. But everything from a chain reaction will mutate a fruit fly. That's why we have nuclear waste sites, and that's why we have repositories. And that's why they keep increasing the acceptable dose limits, because more and more keeps getting out. And so why would we increase the limits if, for instance, pre-Fukushima, tritium, which is radiated water, it's like a screwdriver, it gets magnetized on a battery, the water gets radiated from the radiation itself. And so pre-Fukushima, we're talking 7 becquerels per cubic meter, 1,000 liters of water, or say 100 liters of water, 7 becquerels worldwide. And now in Canada, we have 7,000 becquerels a liter for a drink of water. That's 7 million becquerels in your hot tub, and this is won't leave your body for 120 years. Why it's a low emitter? It's destroying your DNA and your chromosomes. Your body's attacking it constantly. So no matter how small or insignificant the emitter is from a chain reaction, your body reacts to it violently with white blood cells constantly for decades trying to build a tumor around it. Because it doesn't recognize the element because it's not part of the solar system. We created it. And so it's not, like you say, it's not created by the sun. It's a totally different element. That's why we have the terrorist laws and nuclear waste sites. Didn't mean to cut you off, Lonnie, but it's
No,
such an
that's
important point, right?
well, these are all really, this is the hard part is first off, people don't understand the facts. I myself really appreciate hearing it over and over again because, to be honest, after a minute, my eyes start rolling. What I hear is that it ma damages your DNA, but this is why it's important, at least for myself, to constantly hear it again so that I really get a grip on it. Because, like I was sharing with you earlier, I was told that the reason that they only test for cesium is because that's the one that's more easily trackable. And yet that was told to me by a college professor who obviously, again, has, this
So
is one of
what's
the
e what's easier to find, for instance, say you're blind and all you got is feel, touch, or just putting your hands out in front of you, and you're going down a hallway and somebody got a match at one end of the hallway, and at the other end of it is a big bonfire. And so the radiating heat from the bonfire, you can feel that, you can't feel that matches, is the equivalent of looking for cesium versus the real isotopes they should be looking for. Because the emitters that are out there, you can't pick them up with the Geiger counters that they produce. You need special equipment. But that's because their frequency and their energy is so huge, they hit it away that way. These emitters are easy to find for them. And they're very harmful, and that's why they have nuclear waste sites. That's why they have all these. Well, once again, you can't build a sarcophagus to contain the stuff for a very long time because it produces these noble gases, and the noble gases will detonate. So that's what happened to WIP. These noble gases got loose, hit oxygen. They don't need a flame, and then they detonated. And then the whole tunnels, the 55 caverns, football field-sized caverns, we're now coated in a radioactive dust. And so how do you clean out a cave that's full of radioactive dust and that is emitting enormous amounts of energy? And so when it goes into the ocean, think of a snowstorm, like a real bad snowstorm. And so if you're in a snowstorm, you go and you walk around and that snowflakes are going to land on you. And a lot more snowflakes are going to come in close proximity to you. So let's pretend nothing landed on you. But let's pretend all those snowflakes are around you, but they're not actual snowflakes, it's radiation. And so those emitters could be emitting 3, 4, 5 feet, no problem at all. Well, what that means is even though you're sitting on one side of the window and the snow is on the other side, is emitting right through that window, right to you. And that if it's inside of you, and it is, then it's emitting to everything around you. And just like a screwdriver starts getting damaged from, or becomes magnetized when you put it by a battery, these emitters are creating damage all the time in just increments. But when you, you know, it's like a needle prick doesn't feel, it's not nice, but it's just a needle prick. It still hurts. You still have a visual reaction to it. But imagine thousands of needle pricks all the time.
Or then every get, single then you get it. Day, right?
That's what nuclear is. That's what's happening because of Fukushima. Then you get it. Then you would understand it, because that's happening to us inside our body all the time. And we feel lazy and lethargic. And that's because our white blood cells are displacing the oxygen in your body for decades, trying to contain the radiation, the man-made radiation that's in your body. But if you got natural radiation in your body doesn't attack it. Your body needs it. It's not radiation, it's just an emitter, but it's not an emitter that can produce light or energy in the context. So nuclear, a gram of nuclear, 1 gram the size of a dime, that's 400 train car loads, and then all the chemicals to break it down, et cetera, to get a gram. So that's like, that's insane when you think about it that way, but that's 1,000,000 watts. That's a pretty neat trick. But but that's also 88 curies, and a curie is 37 billion atoms. And an atom can give you a cancer 10, 20, 30 years down the road. But natural radiation, or natural emitters like potassium, would only have 160 to 1,000 emitters. So it wouldn't even have anywhere close to a curie, which is 37 billion atoms, versus man-made has 88 times 37 billion atoms.
You know, Dana, you know what, when we talk to the nuclear, anybody who, any scientist who understands this, you know what they will say to you is that, well, it takes, you know, so it does take, even if you get cancer, your risk is 20 to 30 years down the line, and you've had the ability to have a decent life. I mean, this is the insanity of the nuclear argument, is that, well, because it's a slow damaging and it's a cumulative thing, it's not like you get exposed to it and you can wash it off.
The cancer's
it
last one to show
stays with
yeah.
you. It's exactly. And I, you know, this is what I was saying earlier about what I said to Chuck Johnson. Doctors have not kept track. All of the doctors across this country have watched our nation get sick, sick, and sicker. And the doctors, now, the reason that the Flint, Michigan water supply issue became an issue is a pediatrician decided to keep track on her own of all of her patients, her children patient who was getting sick. She went to a government agency and said, hey, look, this is what I'm tracking. We do not have a single set of physicians here in the States who are tracking, you know, when people live next to a nuclear power facility or in fact, what we have
well, they
is
know
scientific
when
denial.
They know it when they built it there on purpose. They built it in the cities close to big areas on purpose.
Yes.
This is an ecocide and a genocide. Everything nuclear, the only reason nuclear is still alive is because they keep telling us like a banana and a potato chip and walking in the sunshine and dental x-ray and blah, 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 which are every single, that's the lies. But that's the exact same lie. If you go back and look at the 50s, and the 40s and the 60s, sorry, the documentation or the little videos they were producing, that narrative is the exact same narrative they're using today. And that's how
right.
they've done it. And every new generation has to puke up the same lie and try to find a better way to do it. And what you got in the expert levels, people that are setting the policies, there's about 100 of them. So United Nations, UNSCLEAR, IRPA, Atomic Agencies, there's roughly 100 experts, and every one of them are professors, sitting professors, experts, nuclear experts, and every one of them will come out in every lecture and every presentation and every media venue that they ever wanted and tell you it's like a banana and walking in the sunshine. That's a patent lie. That's a blatant lie, and that has to be dealt with. That has to be stopped. That has to be called out. That has to be held to account. That has to be demonized and vilified. That has to be scorned heavily every time they open their mouth like that. That is the only way forward. There is no other way forward with these people. You can call them on their lie, like we do, and they're not going to change it. But if you got the whole community, say, you know, when Rupert Murdoch in UK, big media, had he was hacking all these kids' phones that were dying, and he got caught at it. And the whole world turned on him. About 2 million people come out and yelled at him on social networks, screaming in disgust. They had parliamentary investigations on it, the whole nine yards, in order to try to help cover it up and bring him back into the good graces. But he still hated and despised and vilified. And rightfully so. He was hacking children's phones and reading the messages, if nothing else, and then reporting on that in the media and quoting it as friends. And nobody knew where they were getting all this insight, but they were hacking children's phones that were missing or murdered or something like that. And this was an atrocious, absolutely an atrocious. But what it did show, the point I'm making, is that the world, when it wakes up and it screams, they run and cower. But the world didn't stay awake. It only stayed awake for a couple of days. But that 2 days, the repercussions are still felt. Nuclear, that is what's going to happen with nuclear real soon. Mm-hmm. And then all the people out there that are lying about nuclear, all those scientists that are in print, all the journalists that allowed them to get away with it, and all the apologists and the experts, they're going to have their day. They're going to have to answer everywhere they go for the rest of their life. Because the reason we're in this trouble is because these people have never been challenged by anybody, including the media. Media gives them that venue. And so this is the changing toys that we see, but that is the one that's going to change it. Where if someone comes out like Woods Hole or whoever, and these are the big speakers, when they come out and say that's natural, we need thousands of people to come out and tweet out that it's not. That's all you got to do. You don't got to say shut up or anything. You don't got to be rude like me. But all you got to do is come out and say that's not true, and I disrespect you for it. And they will run and cower. They will run and hide. The whole industry will go into its bunkers. They might even set off a nuclear war because people won't believe them. They're lies anymore. But that's how easy it is to take it apart.
That's right. I mean, all we need to do is bark at them, and they're like, wait a minute. I mean, they really do not, because they don't have the facts behind them. The reality is people are dying from this. They can ignore it all they want, but they can lie about the cause of nuclear harm, but the nuclear harm is not going to lie about the harm it causes. You know, John Goffman wrote that book that I read on my YouTube channel, Population Control Through Nuclear Pollution. That was written in 1970. And he wrote it as a warning when they were going full speed ahead with these nuclear power plants. And he was mortified and shocked that they were going to go ahead. And he wrote the book in an effort to get people to go, wait a minute, we've got to stop these people. And in fact, the very last words in his book was that he had every confidence that scientists and activists would stand up to the industrial military complex. He was sadly mistaken, because what Fukushima for me has proven is how much this nuclear industry is controlled by the military, and how seriously fascist all of our media has gotten around the world, frankly. It has been a worldwide complicit program to just ignore Fukushima.
They'll turn to the same radiation experts that we are calling out. And that we can easily call out, that I call out repeatedly different as I find them. I'll call them out and say, hey, this person is lying. Here's the lie. Here's what they just said. Listen to it. And then explain what that is. And so any media could do that. You don't have to, like, but it is such a complicated, they've made it so complicated and convoluted and everything else, but it's still easy to flush out. Because the minute you hear natural radiation, you need to turn on that person. You need to turn on that media, both of them, not just one of them, but both of them. You need to contact them. It's that simple. Look, so natural radiation, once again, a gram of it, think about 162,000 flashlights, even though it's not actually like that. But think about flashlights, 162,000 flashlights with really dead batteries just barely get that light to work. But for nuclear, the same amount, a gram, think of 88 times 37 billion high-powered flashlights. That's the difference. And so when they say it's like natural stuff, this is the way you would look at it. That's the way, you know, that's the way it is. It's like 162,000 very low wattage flashlights for natural potassium for a gram, and then 88 times 37 billion high-powered flashlights for man-made. So which one is going to be the most powerful? And so the difference is just extraordinary. But a gram of it, a single gram of it, distribute it out and give everybody an atom, and there's lots left over for all the animals and everything else. 10, 20, 30, 40 years down the road, you kill everybody on the planet if you don't treat it, if you don't treat these people and every single person. That's a gram. That's just a gram. So a pound of it in raw form, just a brick, 1 pound brick of used fuel rods, will kill everybody in a theater of 1,500 people. It'll do that every 20 minutes till the end of time, till everybody's gone with a single pound of it. So what else on this planet is so volatile and so dangerous and so scary and then lied about so much and claimed to be useful and good and not harmful and that? Now, you know, like Australia is the example where they get $245 million to have a repository. That gets scooped up by three or four corporations immediately, and then that goes out to the shareholders, and they all made a little profit. Now, Australia's stuck with that bill and for the next billion years. They have to maintain that site. They can't walk away from that site. They have to constantly, like Chernobyl, they got to put a sarcophagus over for the next 3,000 like years, Hanford. Every 20 years or so.
I mean, this is the thing. This is the insanity. This is why we're urgently attempting to get the Columbia Generating Station closed down. It's right next door to Hanford, which they're all on. The licensee lied to the government. They knew that there was an active earthquake fault when they built it there at the Columbia Generating Station. They knew that. What the state of Washington discovered when Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility hired their own geologists to confirm that there was indeed an earthquake fault. So the state of Washington was kind of angry because they said they found three earthquake faults. So the state of Washington did their own. They hired a team of geologists and found there's something like 10. They were angry. They're like, what? It's actually way worse than they thought. And that's why there are earthquake drills on the West Coast here now, very regularly, and in Portland, because they discovered that it is an impending overdue massive 9.0 or greater earthquake due on the West Coast, which means if Columbia Generating Station is affected by that earthquake, which is highly likely, Hanford cannot be maintained. Bye-bye, North America.
Hanford, they got 41 miles of open trenches where they dump the nuclear waste directly into the online trenches. The local dump for Hanford, you have for garbage bags from your house, you have to line the trenches. The nuclear, this is how the nuclear, if they line the trenches, you would have a chain reaction in the trench. So what their oh shit plan is to just let it evaporate if they can into the community, let it seep out into the environment.
Say that again. You're saying that if they had lined the trenches, they would have had a chain reaction inside the trench. That's why they didn't
do it? Right, yeah. Because that's where they're dumping the waste after the chain reaction. So this stuff is extremely, it's 2 million times worse than what it was originally. And so all these heavy metals, if they come in contact with each other, this is the problem with the tanks at Hanford. But there's also, they dumped 56 billion gallons of radioactive waste directly into the soil on top of that before the trenches. And so they're worried about these tanks leaking, is what you see in the media, but you don't hear about the other two, right? The 41 miles of open trenches and the 56 billion gallons dumped directly into the soil. But what's going on in the tanks is they dump all this sludge, you know, full of just the worst metals from the chain reaction. And when it comes together, it creates a little chain reaction, burns a hole in the tank, and then it leaks. So-called, like the word leak is just, it's not the right word, but that's the word we end up using all the time. It's the wrong word in every sense of it. Like a leak, like a 1 pound can kill everybody on the planet. So a leak, you know, that could leak out a million pounds. What does that mean in comparison of a pound can kill everybody on the planet? Ultimately, we kill everything on the planet.
Well, you know,
we won't stop the leaks.
Donna Gilmore has outed that. In the United States, actually, we only store our nuclear waste in containers that are half an inch thick. And Dave Lockbaum from the Union of Concerned Scientists has written her and said that actually these thin canisters are not a big concern. He's more concerned that if we get the thick canisters, that they might be dropped when they're being moved, or he's more concerned about a nuclear attack on the facility. So no, he doesn't think that we need thick containers for the nuclear waste, even though we know that they start leaking at 20 years, and after 20 years you can't move the waste. This is the insanity.
And when you do, when you pick it up after 20 years, the bottom falls out.
I mean, Dave Lockbaum is part of the problem. He is paid by the government, and he is actually the expert for the United States Congress. He's the guy who goes to Congress.
He used to be Ian Barrett, And he's a notorious, unbelievable, easily provable lawyer. But look, everybody's interested in, we got nuclear got to be, because I know we're at the end of the show, nuclear got to be clean. Nuclear is clean, green, and carbon free is why they need nuclear. And all of these are just huge lies. But the carbon free one is crazy. That's the stupidest thing imaginable. That came from James Hansen. And James Hansen has nothing to back it up, only a hockey stick. And this is his theory, and then everybody ran with that. And 350.org was spawned from that, where 7,500 communities around the world went out there and said we needed carbon-free nuclear to mitigate the carbon that – but they don't even know what they're talking about. They're
you
talking about
they...
a book written by James Hansen that has no validity. Yeah. So James
350.
Hansen –
350.org brings in $5 million a year. National Resource Defense Fund brings in about $150 million a year. So these – there's contributions that I've asked for. Who are these people? I have not gotten response. It hasn't – I just sent the letters out.
James Hansen is the one you got to take down. He's the killer bee. He's the queen bee. He's the one who goes out and says that people from Three Mile Island – got the same thing as a chest x-ray or flown across the country if they were exposed to the man-made radiation. And so here he is also the one now that is credited with the 350.org and these other organizations about the carbon-free. But every time you see nuclear, every story on nuclear says, well, you know, it's the only source of carbon-free energy out there. And this is an incredible lie, incredible deception, unimaginable crap and lie nonsense. And so James Hansen has to be taken down.
At
James
the Columbia.
Hansen has to be taken apart. He is the guy, every time you hear carbon, you got to put that's James Hansen's nonsense in that conversation.
Columbia, the same James Hansen from Columbia University.
Same James Hansen from NASA.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the same James Hansen, yes. Then. And so James Hansen's narrative, who's a notorious lawyer about nuclear, easy to find the lies, he says, because he doesn't stop lying. Yet everybody's running around, oh, carbon's going to kill us. We don't sequester it, and we don't. And so everybody's carbon footprint is based up on James Hansen fable. So the whole world, every country out there now is talking about global warming. Well, global warming is about carbon. Global warming is all based upon James Hansen's stupid, idiotic, moronic, easy to disprove book. And then he's been put on a pedestal, and everybody quotes him. Every time you hear the word carbon-free, that's James Hansen. That's because of that one single individual who has absolutely lied repeatedly in every statement he makes. And so you go find the videos of him, you hear him talking about natural radiation or getting on airplanes and chest x-rays. These are all the ad hominem lies. And so that's the very base of the tree. You want to knock down a tree, you don't go up and start sawing off each branch. You go down, you knock down the base of the tree. James Hansen is the tree of misery.
Let's talk about James. I'm hoping that, Dana, you can join me on a regular basis. You can either call in or I'll call you, but I'm really hoping that
Friday, hopefully. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I'm hoping like we can use these call-in Fridays because, you know, it's usually we have a few people who call in regularly, but they can still call in and ask you questions directly, and I think that would be really awesome. I'm gonna be calling Dana on a regular basis and have him join me on these call-in Fridays so we can actually complete the week with facts. Dana has lots of information on it, as you've heard today, and we can explore all this information a little bit deeper, and I can actually stop him because I'm slow scientifically and have him sort of repeat some of this information so that we can really grasp it. So, look, we have 30 seconds left. I want to thank you, Dana Durnford from the nuclearproctologist.org, for joining us today on the Age of Fission radio show. So it's been really delightful. It went really fast.
It's
so
funny.
I will. And so thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you for listening to this radio show. Please share it with your friends. We need to increase our listenership. More people need to hear this. Put your courage feet on and speak out and take action. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.